Out for this sermon, if you didn't know. And the context is 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 5. Although I think what Don read was Titus 3, 1 through 5. So, best laid plans. Well, I'm going to be jumping all over anyway. Appreciate your presence this evening, and we're encouraged by your interest in God's Word. And the subject that we're looking at is perilous times from 2 Timothy 3. It talks about, realize this, that in the last days, as Paul writes to Timothy, as he taking care of the area around Ephesus. And I'm going to kind of jump through this, through the introduction here. There's various things that, you know, Paul's bringing out here. And we talked about this when we looked at 2 Timothy 4 of the last days. This is Paul in prophecy. You know, this is not just, you know, a dissertation of what is. This is, you know, God through Paul telling the church that there's shortly going to come a time when they're going to have to deal with it. But it's more than one time. It's several times. As we see the church struggling at different times, different seasons, you know, with various things that kind of well up. When he talks about perilous, you'll see in the introduction that the word is used only twice in the New Testament. Once here, and once when it deals with the men of the Gergesenes, where the word is used for them and it calls them fierce. Okay, now, what we're going to look at primarily in this lesson is a bunch of definitions in these first five verses. We've got to kind of get through those. There's going to be you'll notice this was a part one. Part two will deal next week with how Paul handles these times. So that'll be a clue in for us. As we get into the definitions of the way people are, you're going to find that at any time. But what Paul is getting at is there is a time when these kind of individuals, this kind of characteristic of individuals begins to well up in a kind of a unit, where the people of the time, the culture of the time, kind of exhibits all of these really fierce attributes. Now, what's even more surprising is that it's not just going to come from the outside. You got to deal with it on the inside. This is the problem of the world leaking into the church and then kind of consuming the church, and it'll go on for a while, and then it's got to be purged. And so you get this kind of accordion effect through history of, you know, the church dealing with things, rising up, God helping it, being strong, just like nations, and then going, you know, back down again, subsiding for a while as people get complacent. They don't deal with the problems. They don't deal with the natures and characteristics of people, and it kind of wells up again in the church. So we need to be aware of all these things. And I haven't, as we go through that, I haven't put them, you know, gone in order, as the verse puts it. I've kind of grouped them, you know, like eight different groups. And then, you know, we'll look at them as, you know, they're kind of stuck together. So the first one, the characteristics of perilous are fierce people or fierce times. You know, one is an emphasis on self. And we kind of identify with this. I don't know if this is, you know, if we're moving into one of these periods of time or not. According to Hillsdale's College, we are, you know, as a country. But so this will be a time when one's own interest will supersede that of the interests of God. And this is kind of a terrible commentary on the people of God. It is an interesting revelation concerning those who are supposed to be God's people. Further, some have even called our period the Me Generation. It marks a stunted time of maturity, spiritual growth. For young people that want to grow up, okay, a lot of times they don't understand what it means to grow up. In fact, this lesson is kind of a counterpart to what we gave this morning on Psalms 15. Psalms 15 is the grown-up person. Okay, this is talking about people that have shed off that maturity or never, you know, got into it. And it starts with this. Okay, maturity is a beginning to empty of yourself. It's a process where you go from being a little, you know, baby, and they're cute and everything else, but as far as they're concerned, you know, it's a me thing. You know, it screams, it yells, whatever. It gets, you know, it tries to get what it's want, and everybody gives it what he wants. And its whole world consumes of it. That's an infant. A mature person is someone who generally grows out of that and begins to sacrifice self, you know, a parent for children or for country or for God. You know, the professions we look at most are people sacrificing, whether it's a doctor, a nurse, firefighter, policeman, whatever. These are people that put their life on the line, they put their time on the line for others. Okay, and that's a mark of maturity. Okay, but this is talking about a period of time where you have a culture, even in the church, of people that are so into themselves. You know, we might liken it today of, you know, so many that look for entitlements. You know, they're looking for people to give them things, that they're entitled to it. The world owes them a living. Okay, and that's the basis for all the other kind of evils we're going to find that are growing out of this. There's no real concern for others, their wants, their needs, or their feelings. Doing only what one wants to do without regard for others or hurt or damage it may cause, even to those who have loved and sacrificed for them. Children turn on their parents. Whatever, you know, you'll find all sorts of examples of this. And it's the mark of a sociopath. Someone who looks at life as only for them, and they don't care what they do to others as long as their self is placated. Humanism of today advocates that man is his own God, thus emphasizing the man himself over his creator. And Paul warns us about this in Romans 1. Further, this characteristic serves as a foundation for all the others in this context. When a man makes his own will the center of his life, divine and human relationships will be destroyed. This is why it's immature, because the person doesn't know how to relate to others. They don't know how to talk with others. They don't know how to negotiate. They don't know how to compromise. They don't know how to work out things. They don't play well with others. You know, we put it that way. Another characteristic is greedy, the words of covetous, lovers of money from verse 2. This is the individual who seeks money above all else. For some way, they got it in their mind that this is the most important thing in the world, and they will do anything to acquire it. And it's weird that once they get it, it's not enough. I mean, they can have more than anybody else, and it's not enough. I remember a story from way back about a man who committed suicide because he wasn't listed among the top 400 of Forbes' richest people. He didn't make the list. And so he thought himself a failure, so he ended his life. Since spiritual growth is the developing of relationships with God and one's fellow man, a person then can easily deaden his soul and their appreciation for life by assessing the value of life only in possessions. And this is exactly what Jesus told us, you know, that life doesn't consist of your possessions. It consists of your relationships, especially the one you have with God. A soul can be easily lost in prosperity more than in poverty. They feel self-sufficient. They feel that they've done it all. You know, they don't need anything. They don't need anybody. They especially don't need God. There's also the characteristic of being arrogant. Okay? All sorts of words that, you know, go into this kind of personality. A boaster is one who makes more of himself than he really is. I picked a drama queen for this. Yeah, you're probably familiar with that from high school. The proud man looks down his nose at others. He is a haughty individual. Generally what he does is try to cut, you know, if he can't lift himself up, he'll try to put everybody else down. The high mind is like a smoke of a fire, inflated by his own pride, welling up into something dark, but with little substance. We've talked about these characteristics before. The word that's used for arrogant is actually a word from the forge. It's like, you know, the picture in the Greek is taking a bellows from a forge and sticking it in your mouth and going like this until you're all blown up out of proportion. You know, it's not really you. You've got an inflated view of yourself. Disrespectful, the blasphemer speaks evil of others with insults. These are those that are quick to criticize others while they themselves offer nothing. Monday morning quarterbacks. I mean, we can sit there and look at the football season and what's going on out there, but most of us couldn't do what, you know, even the worst guy on the team, you know, is able to accomplish. So we have to keep this in mind. as we criticize others, it can lead to criticizing God himself. Today, many young people show no respect for their parents by talking back, being disobedient, disrespectful, addressing and viewing them with disdain. These are the people that love you most in this world. And they've sacrificed a lot to raise you. And you're giving them grief. What does that say for your personality and character? The unthankful are ingrates who ignore things that others have done for them. They take God and their fellow man for granted. They don't take the time to be thankful for all they have. They look at life not only as half, you know, the glass half empty, but totally empty. They think, you know, nothing's been given to them. Okay, where if they stop to count their blessings, let's just see how much God has done for them. Primarily, what we always need to remember is whatever blessings you're thankful for, you've got certain specific blessings that have come to you only because the Son of God died on your behalf. False accusers are those that slander others by ruining their reputation and incite contentions and quarrels. And they can be insidious about it. If you ever watched the movie The Caine Mutiny, okay, the doctor on board the ship just let drop a little bit here, a little bit there. You know, didn't partake in it himself, but he said enough to get the whole crew in a mutinous attitude against their captain. And people do this to a church too. Been in churches where there's been splits. It's just because of partying, factions, saying things, whatever. Yeah. And as far as God's concerned, you like to ring it. These are despisers of those who are good, showing no respect for what is right, or for those that stand for them, or even some members of the church who care little about the truth and the proclamation of it. Okay. Because of themselves. Huh? These without natural affection are those who do not have a concern normal to a parent. I mean, we talk about women have a maternal instinct, you know, and it seems to be a myth. Okay? Which is why Peter says, you know, to the, you know, older women, teach the women to love their husbands and love their children. You know, they got to be taught that. Yeah, we found that out. The judge that made the decision on Roe versus Wade, the guy actually thought that the maternal instinct of the girls would kick in and they wouldn't abort the babies. Boy, was he wrong in spades. Okay. And notice, it manifests itself not only in the abortions. They don't love the children. They don't love their older parents. Euthanasia, you know, they're very willing, you know, to sign on, you know, the death panels and stuff like that to get rid of the older people. The forsaking of the aged, especially their parents, and children being physically, emotionally, and sexually abused. They could care less. They're out for their own lusts and desires. And they have no conception of what they're doing to another human being. They don't look at, you know, of people as being in the image of God, complicated things. Not only is the mind complicated, but so is the spirit. And we don't know how the two interact and are attached. That's a complication that's beyond our understanding. In fact, someone said, if things were simple enough for the mind to understand it, the mind wouldn't be able to understand it anyway, because the mind would be too simple. These are people that just don't understand the implications of what they say, what they do. When they take another life, I mean, think if you thought of this. When you kill somebody, you've heard of murders or whatever. Yeah, I know you wouldn't do that. But all the damage you're doing. I mean, there's people that invested in this human being. And you just wiped all that out. Whatever the person was going to be, you've taken that away, whatever good they may have been to the society. Not only that, but you've done away with them, their children, their grandchildren, and an infinite number of souls that might have been brought into this life. You've taken it out. And didn't even think, you know, twice of it. And obviously, with whatever you do, in all the things, there's repercussions, and we're going to have to stand before God and give an account of it. Unrestrained, the unholy engages in all sorts of forms of sin. The incontinent or without self-control. You know, we talk about continents, we talk about a landmass that's bordered by an ocean. When someone is incontinent, that means they've got no borders. They've got no rules. You know, they'll do whatever they want because there's no, you know, there's no conscience inside of them to say stop. Their drives, impulses, and passions run wild and unbridled. They are fierce, perilous, untamed, brutal. These are the words that are used in the context. The heady acts without wisdom, without thought, carelessly. Just does what it wants to. Went to Chino Youth Authority one time. And, you know, psych class, we were visiting, you know, some of the inmates and stuff. And one of the young men, I sat down, you know, personally, I was talking to him. And he told me what he was in for. But he said, you know, they caught me on that. But it was almost a note of pride. He told me about another incident that he didn't get caught in, where he and his buddy just decided to crash a party, you know, of other young people, and they carried guns with them and just started shooting people at random. He thought it was the funniest thing that he ever did. Yeah. And the teacher told me, this young person is never getting out of here. They'll keep them in youth authority until they're roughly 23, 25, and then they'll march them down the street to maximum security prison, where the adults are. Never going to get out of jail. Just because, you know, they've got no moral compass. There was nothing inside of them to restrain them from doing anything. Cannot be trusted. These are truth breakers. We talked about this morning. Covenant breakers. Ignorers. Their word means nothing. They'll tell you something and do the exact opposite, you know, as they turn away from you. They have no knowledge of truth. They don't know what it means, what it implies. They are also unforgiving and irreconcilable. You can't get along with them. You can't make up to them. You can't work things out. They don't negotiate. Can't make peace. I mean, there's a literally why in these kind of times it's best just to stand out of the way and let God do his thing. And he'll do just like he did with the flood, just wipe out everything that's evil and help us start all over again. Traitors that turn their backs on others, especially in the church, this is important. Especially as the world begins to crowd in, we have to know who we can trust. We need to know who has our backside. When we stand up for what is evil, we have to know who will stand up with us. God needs to know who's going to stand up for him. Thrill seekers, lovers of pleasure. in our culture, we're getting into the extreme sports. I guess the explanation is the closer you get to death, the more you appreciate life. Well, you know, until you wrap yourself around a telephone pole or a tree, you know, then you can see just how bad the joke was. You know, why push it? Life has enough dangers in it. You know, I mean, most of us here that have lived for a period of time have run into some pretty close calls and barely escaped them. Whether it's been an auto accident or something else we were doing, you know, something stupid we were doing as a young person. Yeah. So why push your luck? I mean, I've known, I was sitting in a college class with a man next to me, and he used to be a fighter pilot. And I said, you don't do any of that, you didn't make a career of it. And he goes, you get in that plane, and after a while, you start to figure your luck's going to run out eventually. He said, I just couldn't get in there anymore, and got out. those that are out for sensual pleasures and diversions, even warping the worship service of the church to entertain, to rouse. When Paul talks about the idolatry as being part of the harlotry of Israel, okay, and we can see it among the Corinthians in the New Testament and others, people get so sensually oriented that they begin to turn the worship into something that's sensually oriented. And so they had the prostitutions come in the temple. They had other things that they did, you know, abominations you can't even mention, you know, in order to turn religion into something, you know, this is part of the Baal worship, something that was sensuous, immoral, abominable. And you know, it's the root of idolatry. You know, it's how the devil sucks us in. It appeals to our baser, you know, lusts and desires, and takes us away from what God is trying to do, help us to grow and mature in the spirit. I mean, we are made up of these things, the body, mind, and soul, our spirit. And the mature individual is the one that through the spirit begins to control everything else. When we are controlling things from the bottom up, we're nothing more than animals. In fact, this is what you know, Jude, Peter calls them, evil beasts. You know, in the worship service. Thrill seekers, lovers of pleasure. Some are interested only in the pleasures of life, so they drink, you know, use drugs, and engage in fornication, go to filthy movies, anything to churn this up. You know, they live in a world of sensuality. And therefore, they can say, well, I've got the excuse that, you know, it just pushed me to the limit. I couldn't do about it. You know, young people go on dates and they put themselves into situations where they have the excuse, hopefully, well, I just, you know, the devil made me do it. Not taking responsibility. Your whole purpose really as a Christian is to fill your life with the things of God. This is why when we got into Philippians, the fourth chapter, you know, the things you need to think on, whatever's true, whatever's honorable, whatever's right, whatever, this is what you have to fill your life with. Why you need to keep, you know, studying the scriptures. You know, fill your mind with it so that the reality of your life is the things of God. Where you walk daily, you know, like the disciples did with their Lord. For them, he was the reality. They were listening constantly, you know, to the things that he taught, the wisdom that he spread, the things that he did. You know, they beheld the miracles. We can do the same thing. We can walk with our Lord daily in the scriptures. We can go out and look at the world that surrounds us. It's still God's world. This is what's so incredible, is the fact that if you go to someone's house, especially someone that, you know, has a lot of activities in it, you will see their world around them. You'll see the pictures, you know, their family or whatever thing they do, their fishing, their golfing, whatever. You'll see the trophies on the mantles of everything they did. Okay, that's their world of the things that they've accomplished, the things that they've done. You'll see the diplomas on the walls, everything that's there. Okay? Well, as you step out in the world, you see the same thing of God. I mean, it's you know, for someone to walk into, you know, your house and see all these things and go, you don't exist, where there's pictures of you and all your accomplishments and everything else, and to claim you don't exist. And men go out in the world and they see the things of God. It's his heavens. It's his creation. It's his sun. It's his moon. His stars. You know, his air, his ground, you know, all of it. He's made it. People in his image. You know, it's his house. And to walk into it and to see this stuff and not see it and say there is no God just doesn't make any sense. That's what he tries to tell us. It's all around us. It's evident, even inside of us. I challenge you. Just pick one thing on you. Okay? How complicated it is to make a robot that does this. Okay? And they can pick up something. They've got that far, but that robot can't feel yet. Okay? We have all sorts of optics, but nothing yet, whether it's microscope, telescope, or whatever, can match the mechanism of the human eye. Okay? Got that firsthand. You know, I've got implants. So, yeah, being blind almost, you know, most of my life, you know, clinically, and then having, you know, the lenses put in, so now I got 20/20 vision. But I still need these to read. Why? Because the plastic or whatever it is they put in, or glass, you know, for the lens, isn't as elastic as the eye itself that God gave us. So if we go for one for the other, or Mike's got one that goes one way and one the other, that would drive me nuts. But yeah, we got to do all the other stuff, even when we, you know, all this, you know, miraculous stuff that men have come up with, it still doesn't match the miracle of God's creation. It only takes a small, you know, bit of time to sit down and contemplate this stuff. And it's inside each one of us. And still, men, you know, if they say there is no God, it's because they walk through this world blind. And they're blind because they're giving in to their own passions and lusts, and got rid of the ability to think. Outward form of godliness. And again, Paul is writing to Timothy about the problems occurring in the church. These are those who pretend to be religious, but are really hypocrites, actors on the stage. Even today, people know the buzzwords of religion. I mean, they'll talk about unity and love and faith, but they think only of unity for greater numbers and thus a larger contribution, not necessarily the unity of purpose and the authority that Jesus prayed for. It's almost laughable, some of the cultic guys that get up there on television go, "The Bible says," they'll hold it up, and they'll spout something, but they never open it and show you, really? Where does it say that? They know they have to go here for authority, and they appeal to it, but they really don't understand what that authority is. They don't look at the words in the context. They'll misuse words like love and use it to set aside the commandments of God. We're going to get into the study of that, you know, one of these Wednesday nights, on that handout sheet I gave you. They talk of need for love of their fellow man, but use it as a tool to pry the saints away from loving God properly, to the extent of obeying Him properly. They talk of faith, but strip it of obedience and trust and commitment to the Heavenly Father. I mean, what is love? And when you use the love just to go, well, if we love everybody, we'll let all sorts of abominations or perversions or things, whatever, in the church. There's people arguing for it more and more all the time. But Jesus argued, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. You'll do what I tell you to do. You'll take a stand against what is evil. Okay, that's true love. They use the word, but they don't define it properly. This is why we take time to go through these things and define these words so we understand what they mean. Not only into the negative, but also into the positive. To know what God really requires of us and what we need to turn away from. We said next Sunday night we'll cover part two. Yeah, we may be heading into one of these periods of time. I'm not going to claim to be a prophet. Just as I think I know which way God's going with things, you know, he does a U-turn or something. So just, you know, leave it open and make sure we recognize it. And if it does come, like I said, next week Paul's going to tell us how to deal with it. And so we'll look at that more detail. You know, get a little farther in the context and see, you know, the wonders of God and the wisdom of God and even dealing with the worst of times. For right now, though, sometimes these things, you know, get singled out and we go through our own worst times and we need help. You know, there may be temptations in some of your lives, you know, that the rest of us aren't suffering yet. The chances are we've been through our own worst times and can help you, you know, get through it, you know, with God's wisdom and instruction and and how to deal with it. So whatever your needs are, if you'd like God in your life and help, and you'd like to be committed to Him this evening in baptism, have your sins washed away, or if you've already begun and you'd like prayers on your behalf for strength or direction or God's special help in your life, or anything else. If you just like areas that you'd like to be more fortified in and strengthened in, like to sit down and do some Bible study, happy to do any of that. And the invitation is always extended. But for now, if you got a special need right now, an urgency, why don't you come forward and we'll just stand the same.